crickets, watering the milk from a hole in the roof where the rain came through. What can you do? Tears from your little sister, crying because she doesn't have a dress without a patch for the party to go. But you know she'll get by, 'cause she's living in the love of the common people, smiles from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to, mama's gonna love it just as much as she can. And she can. It's a good thing you don't have a spare. People fall through the hole in your pocket and you lose it in the snow on the ground. Gotta walk in the town to find a job. Trying to keep your hands warm when the hole in your shoe, let the snow come through and chill you to the bone. Somehow you better go home where it's warm, where you can live in the love of the common people, smile from the heart of a family man. Daddy's gonna buy you a dream to cling to, mama's gonna love you just as much as she can. And she can.
Well, I wonder if that'll be featured in some way, shape or form. Love of the Common People, of course, John Young. And maybe, of course, we're not talking about common people, although what would the ordinary, simple folk do, as they once said in Lerner and Lowe's classic Camelot? Well, to address this and to begin to perhaps put some of his own unique and fantastic perspective on the grand event, which, of course, is upcoming between Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Yes, I know, she's given up acting, but then again, so did Grace Kelly. And that's another line entirely. We welcome the fantastic Richard Fitzwilliams. How are you, Richard?
Well, I'm very well indeed, and indeed just a few days now. And we will see a remarkable event. And there's no question in the history of the monarchy. I mean, Walter Badgett, the constitution historian, said that a royal wedding rivets mankind. 5,000 journalists will be descending on London. And no doubt whatsoever that this will get worldwide coverage, but it is absolutely unique because for the world's most eligible royal bachelor to marry an American biracial divorcee, a former actress and a humanitarian activist who's not afraid to speak her mind, there's no question that they will, I think, become a dynamic duo nationally and internationally for charitable events inspired by Diana.
Is that, I mean, I mentioned at the start the Grace Kelly effect. I mean, that's the other thing. It's also worth pointing out that the journalists will be descending on Windsor. I don't want anybody in Windsor thinking that, hang on, he's just referred to us descending on London. We have nothing to do with London.
It's amazing when talks about London sometimes. Perhaps I'm so rather London-centric, but they have to get to Windsor, I would point out, London is en route. I think that the operations are planned from London, and of course the media village is being constructed at Windsor. Oh, absolutely. And interesting, since you mentioned Windsor, it's strange how that name has become synonymous with Englishness, because 101 years, to be precise, ago, the royal family's name was Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, which was German during the First World War. To change it to Windsor, which Lord Stamfordham, the remarkable courtier of George V, his suggestion was taken up. And also, I mean, when Edward VIII abdicated, he chose Duke of Windsor. Falstaff's Merry Wives of Windsor, we think of. But also the fact that Windsor Castle has been on a wooden keep with earthworks since the Normans. Henry I made it a palace where there was the first royal wedding and the last for hundreds of years, where he married Adela Levain in 1122. And subsequently, Henry II created the Stone Castle, and then Edward III, from whom Meghan, by the way, has a descent, making the castle the headquarters of the Order of the Garter, our premier order of chivalry, and fascinating that the chapel in which they will marry, that is the chapel of the the Garter Knights, and linking to Edward, and subsequent to that, Charles, subsequent to that, Henry VIII. And it's interesting that one of Meghan's ancestors, Lord Hussey of Sleaford, was executed by Henry VIII for plotting against the king, or allegedly anyway, in the Pilgrimage of Grace revolt. Henry and Elizabeth I used it often for diplomatic entertaining. Charles I was imprisoned there prior to his execution. And then we had the two huge refurbishments of the castle for Charles II, for obvious reasons it had been taken over by Parliament and somewhat neglected, and then, of course, George III, ill there, as we saw in the film, recovery, but also he spent his twilight years very unhappily there when he was extremely ill and reclusive, and subsequent to that, George IV spending £800 million in today's money, I invite you to think of that, in creating this Gothic masterpiece. And on the subject of masterpieces, we had the chapel, which is created by beginning Edward IV and subsequently finished in the reign of Henry VIII, a masterpiece of perpendicular Gothic. Then also the fondness of Victoria and Albert for Windsor. She was known as the Widow of Windsor after Albert died there. And in 1856, there is a report that in the royal household names, the list at the time is another of Meghan's ancestors, Mary Bird, who it seems may have worked as a domestic servant. Another link that Meghan has with it. And of course, the Queen remembering Windsor so fondly. When she was a child, she and Princess Margaret were there during the war, and she was educated there, and also joined the Women's Royal Volunteer Services. Remembering also, of course, that it was in the Queen's reign, we've had a refurbishment because of that dreadful fire. But in 5 years, they did absolutely brilliantly. So in 1997, Queen and Prince Philip celebrated 50 years there, and that basically is a look at Windsor and royal history, with the royal weddings beginning after the one I mentioned in the 12th century, the 1863, when the Prince of Wales, later Edward VII, married Princess Alexandra of Denmark, and subsequently, of course, we have the great day on Saturday.
Is it the first royal wedding that's taken place on an FA Cup final day?
I think that is a fair bet. Yes, I think so. I think William will send a message via some form of screen to those assembled. But the idea that the one clashes with the other, I mean, good heavens, if you are royal and you're attached to a particular institution, you can't be expected to attend every single one of its events. On the other hand, I think there will be an effort to talk to the crowds via a screen or screen link on what will be a very happy day for everybody.
Well, I gather if you're in Lincoln, you can actually watch the whole proceedings via a special large screen that's been set up or being set up outside Lincoln Castle, which I suppose keeps things ticking over from that. I'm getting a sense, actually, that there isn't quite the magic with respect to this that there was with respect to William and Kate, for perhaps obvious reasons. Are we expecting a showpiece, or is it a case of, actually, it's a public relations exercise to ensure that post-Brexit, our special relationship with the United States is maintained?
Well, I mean, there's a thought with our first American princess, but on the other hand, it's not a state or semi-state occasion as it was in 1981 or 2011, and of course, as you well know, the Obamas weren't asked, and it has not been necessary to ask presidents or prime ministers, whether the British prime minister or the American president. I mean, there is no question it would be more personal, but think in 2011, there was a bank holiday. It was set in London with Westminster Abbey. You had the, I think a million people descended, in fact, on London. And also, there's no question about it, you had them descending into the Mall. You had the two kisses between William and Kate on Buckingham Palace balcony. And also, we'll see Meghan there after tripping the colour on the 9th of June, which I'm looking forward to. But another point there, too, of course, is that you had tens of thousands lining the streets for the drive in landaus back from the Abbey to the palace. And London can accommodate crowds, Windsor simply cannot. So whereas 2,640 people have been chosen to view what they can see of the event from the castle grounds, and there will undoubtedly be as many as can reasonably be fitted in. I'm not sure about the numbers, and of course there'll be a vast security presence there, no doubt of that. The facts are that in 2011 it was different, and of course William is second in line to the throne, and one day will be our king, Harry, and this is important. It's particularly important for Meghan and for what he and Meghan hope to achieve. He's sixth in line to the throne and won't have those constraints.
In case you're keen to look at your own arrangements for the day, and we'll be asking you in a few moments, Richard, what will you be doing on the day itself? The Lincoln Castle screening actually starts in the morning at 10 a.m. It finishes at 3 p.m. in the afternoon because the castle has to get ready for the performance of the Bay City Rollers and Bjorn again. So life continues. So, Richard, what will you be actually getting up to on the day itself? Or is it a case of, look, I've done quite enough of all this?
I have not at all. I have just returned. We have now discussed chatting from a piece from CNN following Max Foster, their correspondent, who gave a lovely report that he was actually in the historic St. George's Chapel, talked of its history and with the banners of the Knights of the Garter above him, and also the links with the various kings, some of which I mentioned. In fact, on the build-up to the day, I'm doing a whole series of events, debates and talks and so forth, a debate on Radio London, various pieces for CNN, down at Windsor, piece for BBC World Windsor, I was hoping to liaise with BBC Wales too down there, and in the hours that you mentioned, I will be doing a commentary with others live for Yahoo.com, and then subsequent to that, I'll be reviewing it all and how it went from Turkish television and others. So, I mean, it's a wonderful period to be someone who's a follower of the royal family and keen on these events. And it's also, it's a glorious opportunity to look at documentary footage of previous weddings. Although some, and I mean, one has to be frank about this, Meghan is at Versailles, and previously this caused so many problems in the 1930s, as we know, although fortunately, because Edward VIII would have been an abominable king to be head of state during the war, and also in the 1950s with the Queen's sister, Princess Margaret. But considering the three out of the Queen's four children and her sister are divorced, and considering also that Charles and Camilla, when they married in 2005, both were divorced, it would have been absolutely impossible to continue the feeling that there was some form of stigma to divorce. It's very lucky in 2002, Church of England's ruling that divorced couples could marry in church, even if former spouses were living, provided they had the priest who wanted to do it. And of course, we know the Archbishop of Canterbury is only too delighted to marry Meghan and Harry.
Well, I know that you're also looking forward to reviewing in weeks to come the true example of galactic royalty with the release of Solo, the movie, the latest Star Wars epic, but that's obviously still to come.
We have Entebbe, if we have time for...
Go on then, squeeze it in, what the hey. Shall we have a victory at Entebbe, or shall we just do a raid on Entebbe, because there were two Entebbe movies back in the day, I recall.
Yes, and one starred Elizabeth Taylor, I also recall. This, however, is, I thought, rather interesting. The critics, the reviews I read have been very unenthusiastic because of the movie's pace. But I got quite a lot out of it. I mean, this, for those who need an introduction, was the infamous hijacking of an Air France jet en route from Tel Aviv to Paris in 1976, and subsequently it was diverted to Kampala, Uganda, then ruled by the monstrous Idi Amin, and an Israeli raid rescued those still in peril. So it's obviously a subject for an adventure movie, but here director Jose Ferrer tries to be thoughtful. And I thought he's largely succeeded. This was to make a film showing the mindlessness of the terror, but also how each atrocity in the conflict between the Palestinians and the Israelis perpetuates this ghastly circle of violence which is still unresolved. So what you have is a fascinating insight into the mind of the terrorists, the hijacking carried out by two members of the Palestinian Popular Front. They're supported by two German left-wing radicals, Wilfried Boser, played by Daniel Brühl, and Brigitte Kuhlmann, played by Rosamund Pike, act in solidarity with them, but their methods diverge when the hijackers start separating the Jewish passengers from the rest. And it's an interesting insight into the rootlessness, the aimlessness of the terrorist. One of the passengers, the Palestinians, actually says to Boser, "You are here because you hate your country. I am here because I love mine." And this is the dilemma of the terrorist, and it's contrasted with the clashes between Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, played by Leo Ashkenazi, and his defense minister Shimon Peres, played by Eddie Marsan, who's got very strange makeup. He's got a squint. You feel he's been plotting too much or something, but each one wants to the other to shoulder the blame if the raid that they plan to rescue Operation Thunderbolt, rescue the hostages, fails. There's also a bizarre touch with the terrified passengers being welcomed to Uganda by its monstrous president, Idi Amin, played by Nonso Anozie. He's no Forrest Whitaker, of course, who was so brilliant in The Last King of Scotland, but he's scarily imbecilic. The device critics have felt has slowed the movie down. It was rather interesting because we see the use of the chair dance. It's a work by an Israeli choreographer where the dancers shed traditional Jewish garb, abandon their preconceptions, and this is intercut with the raid, which is supposed to symbolize the change needed to find peace. It's an unusual movie. Some bits of it don't work. The subplot linking an Israeli soldier with one of the dancers is far too contrived. It's actually quite an intelligent film, and I thought that it had rather a lot to say, and putting it mildly, it's prescient in recent years. The threat of terror, alas, has got even worse, and the cauldron of turmoil in the Middle East remains.
Well, Richard, at least we can pretty much guarantee that the two words there, scarily imbecilic, can never be applied to any American presidents.
Certainly not. Would I think of such a thing?
Just wanted to raise that point and make sure everything was clear on it.
All right, you are.
Richard, it's been fantastic as ever. A movie and views and thoughts on the grand event. We'll probably look forward to reflections on the day as well from that perspective. I feel, actually, there's no need to go to any other particular station, any of the sort of BBC channels, etc., unless they're following you on CNN, because, frankly, I think you've encapsulated everything there, really. So it's all marvellous. Enjoy the day. I'm sure you will.
I most certainly will, and it will also be a day which will have some very, very interesting touches. The gospel choir, for example, linked to Meghan's paternal past with slavery and also her beloved mother. She'll be altering the normal protocol when the bride goes to the service with her father. She'll be with her mother, which is a charming touch. Then her father, Thomas, a former lighting director in Hollywood. It's very interesting. He lit the Oscars in 1986 and apparently was involved in the lighting of the Olympic Games in 1984 and won two Emmys. He'll be walking her up the aisle, and we will see a wedding like no other, and I think that this will be something that does indeed rivet mankind.
Well, that surely has to be the business of a royal show in the vernacular. Richard Fitzwilliams, back again next week.
I look forward to it.
Love is in the air, everywhere I look around. Love is in the air, every sight and every sound. And I don't know if I'm being foolish, don't know if I'm being wise, but it's something that I must believe in, and it's there when I look in your eyes. Love is in the air, in the whisper of the trees. Love is in the air, in the thunder of the sea. And I don't know if I'm just dreaming, don't know if I've and it's there when you call out my name. Love is in the air, in the rising of the sun. Love is in the air, when the day is nearly done. And I don't know if you're an illusion, don't know if I see it true, but you're something that I must believe in, and you're there when I reach out for you. Love is in the air, everywhere I look around. Love is in the air, every sight and every sound. And that's there when I look at you.